This is Jane Latour on November 19th interviewing Kay Webster. So Kay, tell me a bit about your background, where you were born, when, your parents.
I was born in Buffalo, New York in 1953, and my father was a carpenter and also a cement worker, and did the layout of buildings. That was his job, and in Buffalo, that's no joke because the weather is so cold. And then my mom was for a long time a housewife and mother, and then moved into working for the post office eventually after my father's heart attack.
So they were they both union members?
He was a union member initially, and then was, it's complicated because the organized crime being involved in the union, he stepped out of the union and wouldn't go back. Actually, he was kicked out of the union because he went to work for a friend of his, and they kicked him out. He was non-union for a good chunk of time.
Mm-hmm. And your mom was in the union?
Yeah, postal workers union. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to just go swiftly into the area of concentration, what was your motivation for getting a job in the trades?
Well, when I first came to New York, I was a waitress. Mm-hmm. And the money wasn't very good after a while, and I thought if I'm going to take harassment, I might as well get paid better. So I actually went to a trade school. It was Allcraft for a little bit of time. I knew how to do carpentry before then, and I was doing some carpentry before then.
But how did you know that? From your father or?
From my father, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I could do, build walls. Mm-hmm. I could hang doors. I wasn't that great at it, but I could get some work, as demolition and basic carpentry. But I decided that, oddly, there were a lot of women carpenters in the periphery, and so I decided to take up plumbing. And there was a guy who we did a few jobs together, and actually I think one of them was for Marty. And then I wound up just doing freelance plumbing on the Lower East Side, really, earn as you learn, and making very little money, like sometimes $3 an hour. It was rough. But
well, tell me about Allcraft. How did you hear about them, and what kind of program did you go through?
They had a great, at that time, I can't remember, it was CETA. It was called CETA, Comprehensive Employment Training Act. And there was money at that time to do that kind of training. So I went through a very short, like month-long thing. And then just really by the seat of my pants, learned and worked. And finally hooked up with someone I had met who was a contractor. And then I did. And that's where I really learned new construction. Before that, I was working on galvanized pipes that would fall apart if you breathed wrong.
So now, did you apply to the plumbers local in Manhattan?
Yes. Let's see. At that time, there were two ways of entering the union. One was through a training program, and the other was apprenticeship. And I was initially let in the training program.
And that's what they called trainees, and that was through New York State.
That's right. And there were problems with the training program that, you could technically be a trainee forever and not ever be admitted. And it was seductive in a way. It was started out as something that was actually supposed to work, and then it wound up being a catch-all to sort of keep people of color and/or women non-apprentices.
So what did you have to do as part of that program? Did you have to report to a certain place, go to classes?
Yes, there was a once-a-week class at the Plumbers Union. We had very little preparation for it. I believe actually the guy, we got in through Allcraft. There were two women, myself and Rosa Manguel. And she left after the first few weeks because we got in there and we had no preparation. We walked into a welding class where the fumes, and we had no idea what we were doing. She was wearing open-toed shoes, and, you know, it was absurd. And there was always an atmosphere of heavy tension in the room.
And how many, I mean, most, 99% male, right?
There was one woman on the site, and that was me, after Rosa left, which was shortly after. And the classroom portion, which we took up after the welding, I never felt like I really learned much welding. We were doing oxyacetylene. I didn't really get, we walked in the middle of that. The classroom portion was very hostile. There, I walked into the room one day, and there was a picture of a woman spread eagle, you know, on the board with a plumbing term written to, pointing to her crotch, saying, it basically means from a putrid source, you know. Uh-huh. And you know, and so I walked up to the board and tore it down and threw it in the garbage and sat down, but I was really shaken. It felt scary being there, even though I think some of the guys had no ill intention, but just they had no concept of what it would be like for a woman to walk in there. And I was in my early 20s, mm-hmm. so it was like, I remember the welding class, I went to the bathroom, we had to use the teacher's bathroom because there were no women's rooms there, and threw up, and then just had to look at myself in the mirror and say, go back and do it for your mom. You know, she had to do this when she was in the postal union. She was the only woman on the line, and she had to have the job. We needed the money, so I just steeled myself and said, you're going to go back in there. And eventually, they were supposed to put us on a job, and they, of course, never did. And the funny part was the excuse was always there weren't any women's toilets, which I thought was funny for the plumbers union to say.
Right. Pipes are always the problem with the plumbers union.
Well, it was a, you know, but you have to get a Johnny on the spot and label it female. You know, how hard is that?
It's rather difficult. Yeah. So, and the content was all about plumbing. It wasn't about theory or codes or basically how to be a plumber.
Yeah, not that was first year.
And it wasn't hands-on, or did they show you actually?
It would have been eventually, I'm sure. I mean, the welding was the first thing we walked in on, and that was hands-on. Mm-hmm. But I assume it would have been eventually. It's just I didn't last long enough. I took them. Mm-hmm. I filed charges at the Commission on Human Rights at that point.
And did anything ever come of that?
I'm trying to remember. There were so many. Nothing came of that. But then I applied for the apprenticeship program. And that was a...
And how did you hear about that? Through Allcraft?
I can't really remember. Okay. It might have been Allcraft. It might have been just through the union. Okay. Although I think I had stopped going to classes by then. It was just... It was scary to go there. It was at night. There was nobody around. It was a deserted... It was the back entrance, you know, on... I can't remember the street, 20 something. Yeah. And...
I went there as a union observer once, and that was scary. Yeah. And that was broad daylight.
Right. At that time, too... They had links to organized crime, you know, that got cleaned up a lot, but oh, they were. Anyway, it was an interesting thing, place to be, but I heard about it somewhere, and then I stood in line, got my application, took the test.
Were there other women?
There were, from Allcraft, there were other women, and other women did get in that at that point, but... they listed me. I had the interview, and I remember distinctly one of the things the guy said in the interview, these are not the hands of a plumber. Meanwhile, I was doing plumbing. I was working non-union, doing a lot of plumbing, actually. I was working every day. So I thought that was interesting, you know. But, you know, he could tell by my hands. And when I got back my test score, they said you tested low. You know, you didn't make it until you're 180-something. And so I went after that. I found out I had to write to the state to get my score, and they said, no, you tested high. You, where you failed, where you had trouble was in the interview. So I wound up filing charges, and the result of that was that I was offered a second-year apprenticeship, and I was offered, my main point was to get the discriminatory testing, those interviews knocked out as a
tool,
way to interview,
right.
Which, that was the agreement. I never went to the apprenticeship thing. I was warned by some of the guys there, don't come back here. You know, not in an unfriendly way. They just said, we don't think, the young guys, don't come back here. They're talking about you. You don't want to be on the site with these guys. So I said, okay. And by that time, I was already in the non-union job. We were doing this one project with 144 units. It was a big job. And I was the manager. So, you know what I mean? I was like, why am I going to go to the second year apprentice work under those hideous conditions when I actually have a group of guys that I'm working with that are actually pretty good and I'm earning enough money.
And so that was, what year about was that? Around 78, something like that?
Yeah, it probably was around 78.
So
I can look at those.
So it, but it was residential, right? So that's
yes.
why it was non-union.
Yeah.
And,
And it was also minority contractors. I mean, there were a lot of trouble with the unions at that point. I mean, I felt I had wanted to go the union route for a lot of reasons,
mm-hmm.
and I always recommended it. You know, there were women somewhere in here. I also did a stint teaching at Allcraft, teaching plumbing, because I knew enough of the base. I knew enough to teach the plumbing, and actually it was really fun. And I always told them, you don't ever want to learn the way I had to. You know, it's like, it's just by the seat of my pants.
Mm-hmm.
It was nerve-wracking to be a woman out there. I mean, thank God some of the suppliers, this guy at Greenberg's used to always be so kind to me. You know, he would help me. And, you know, I said, you just don't want to learn that way. You want protection. You want to build a pension. You want to have the insurance. You want somebody to train you so you really know. So that's the route you want to go. But at that time, there had been a woman prior to me, a Chinese woman who they kept talking about, and I never met, but she left after.
Because they talked about it because she was good at what she did?
No, because she was a woman, and they were, you know.
Still amazed.
Yeah. And she left after a few years, and I don't know why, but I can imagine. So, you know, I felt like I didn't really have an option there, but I wanted the training, I wanted the test changed. I felt like that's something I could leave with in good conscience, but it was also, at the time, you know, it was still true, a lot of guys of color couldn't get in those unions,
mm-hmm.
a lot of women couldn't get in those unions, and it was a tough choice. I mean, but I didn't feel, you know, it's a different system. It's not like when people hear of unions, they hear of, you know, like the production line, you know, workers together, but that was really came from a guild system.
Mm-hmm.
It was father-son and, you know, had its own problems because of that.
So now, with the trainee program, was it mostly minority men? Were there white men?
There were supposed to be mostly minority
mm-hmm.
men. There were a lot of white guys, and I never quite understood what all was going on there. At the time, I remember researching it, and Lindsay had started, and then he folded on it, and really had it become, you know, not consequential. It wasn't doing what it was supposed to
mm-hmm.
do.
Well, there was a lot of opposition to it from the unions, and eventually,
until they reworked it to serve them
mm-hmm.
their own purposes, but it meant that the guys, mostly guys of color, then would be trainees forever,
mm-hmm.
you know. And they often would offer a little bit higher pay as an inducement, which, you know, for a lot of us, we were of an age, we were in our later 20s or middle 20s, mm-hmm. and at that point, you had to earn enough to live on, and a lot of those white guys' kids were living at home, you know,
mm-hmm.
so they could earn a salary of $5.25 an hour as an apprentice and not be a problem. But for a lot of those guys, they were families, they were trying to survive on their own, and they had to take the slightly higher pay,
mm-hmm.
but it, of course, they got screwed in the end because they were not necessarily tracked for, you know, the apprenticeship,
mm-hmm.
which would move you forward 1, 2, 3, 4 years, and then you're a master and stuff like that. So, yeah.
About the Allcraft, how was the training there? Was that
it was
what was that program like?
It was okay. That's actually where I first met Evan. She was in my, I was teaching them plumbing, and she was a student there, and she was a rebel. And there were problems with it. I mean, it's, you know, a government program. But, you know, Joyce Hartwell, who ran it, was a complicated person, but really dedicated to women getting this thing. You know, she had run Lady Carpenter for years and years, and she's an interesting human being, but feisty as hell, and, you know, just did push a thing forward, very strategic in her own odd way, but chaotic. And the training I got was okay. The training that we got eventually was much better that I got to give, because it was 2 months long. I think it was a 2 month or longer, but we had equipment, we had space, we had, you know, material. Women could do so much hands-on work. I mean, they could cut and spread pipe, they could use a sawzall, they could, you know, they used the tools. Much more so, often, women just don't get that chance. So it was a pre-apprenticeship, that was the understanding. We were just trying to get people ready to be able to even try to catch up to what the guys have been doing for, you know, since they were 7 years old. So, and it was mostly women of color and low income. So,
well, tell me about your on the job. What now? Were you basically usually in this non-union job? And you worked for one contractor. You mentioned this big building. Did you keep working for that one contractor?
Often, yeah, yeah.
Do you want to mention the name of the contractor? No? Okay. But were you basically the only female, or did other women come in?
At one point we hired another woman. She didn't stay long, but she did hang out for a little while. Yeah. She was actually the girlfriend of one of the guys, and she was good, really good, but she had other interests. Mm-hmm. So she was, but, and the guys I worked with were unusual. They were an odd crew, but a great group of guys. And the general contractor, the guy who ran the whole project, was, I liked him. You know, he was, they were all, couldn't figure out what to do about me. I mean, they're like, what?
Why?
What? Who? What? The jobs were always, you know, we had to, everything in New York has to be to code, and licensed plumber has to sign off on it, and that's how we would do it. I mean, my guy had a licensed guy to sign off, so everything had to be to code, and, you know, just so. And I loved that part, that was great.
Because it was challenging.
Yeah, and we got really good at it, you know, because we were putting in units, and most of them were the same, but, mostly things, you know, they went okay. There, you know, the one time, you know, since I was the more or less running it, my boss would come in and talk to me about what had to happen, and then I would go talk to the GC, and we'd look over blueprints. But often he would come to our place, but occasionally I would go to his. And the first time I went, the shanties was covered with naked women, just floor to ceiling, and. I was, you know, we did the blueprint thing, and then after we were done, I went over to one of the pictures, and I said, oh, nice legs. And he was so embarrassed that the next day, he took them all down.
Wow.
They were all down, you know. Like, I was always trying to find a way not to, you know, go ballistic and, you know, figure out how to reach them in a way that they could, you know, not feel bad about themselves, but also recognize that maybe something should change. So that was great. And I remember one time coming up in the elevator with one guy who I was sure hated my guts and didn't want me there. And we were coming up in the elevator. It's a dark building, you know, under construction. There's nobody around. And he reaches into his jacket, and I thought, okay, this is it. Like, I might be dead, but this guy's going to be hurting. And he pulled out a picture of his child. And he was just a very shy person, and had never... So I learned something from that, like, you know, I also had a jumpiness about me and my worries.
Assumptions.
Yeah, that had nothing to do with what the guys may have been thinking or feeling at any given moment. But.
So what about, since we're on the subject, let's talk about what were the main sources of conflict?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, basically you're working for the same contractor, so that's a plus because you have a crew and you don't have to keep reestablishing yourself.
Yes.
Did you, and you were working, so you were actually learning the trade and learning your skills, and did you ever take any more courses?
I did, I did. I went to a Brooklyn Technical College and took some, you know, blueprint stuff. Mm-hmm. And but the regret I have, you know, is if I could have gone the union route, I felt like the depth of my knowledge about plumbing would have been just different, you know, just really different. I had that really fly by the seat of my pants always, which I, therefore, you know, I'm very handy. You know, it's like things don't daunt me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, doing old construction in the Lower East Side is where you're really working with galvanized pipes that are so brittle. And but I love to do that work because I could make a difference in somebody's life. You know, it's like a real difference, not just changing the color of their toilet, you know, this month, you know, but, you know, get them so they had running water, you know. I love doing that. And, you know, fix their toilet, you know, so I'm very good at that stuff, but I could tell working with other guys that, like, they had just more depth, more physics, and more, they just got to be accomplished at it, whereas I was a good, solid worker. I could manage things. I was good at, you know, that's that girl people skills thing. I could run the crew. I could think well about the whole project. But then we had our genius plumber, you know, who would solve problems. And I resented, you know, not getting that, getting to have that education.
How were the men about sharing their skills?
The men I worked with were great. Mm-hmm. And I, in turn, was great with any, mostly young guys who we would bring on. There was always a little hesitation on their part, like, does she really know anything? But I grew up in a construction family, so I feel like it's in my bones. I don't feel, you know, there's certain ways I feel very competent physically. But the real conflicts, there weren't many, except occasionally you'd find a guy who's very insecure and had trouble having a woman around. Just one guy who was just, I mean, partly he had a drug problem, which probably exacerbated, but, you know, just, that was the worst I'd ever encountered, was this guy who was just relentlessly nasty mouth. And in non-union job, again, there's a little less protection in some ways, except my boss, who was great. And a lot depended on that, you know. Like, if we walked into a room, the two of us, and we start talking about the job, the guys would always look at him, tell him everything, look at him, you know, never, just totally ignore me. But he was great. He would just, you know, make it very clear, but just, they'd finish, he'd pause, he'd turn to me and say, so what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. And that alone, like, it changes the dynamics, and without having said a whole lot.
And was that the general contractor?
That was my direct boss, my contractor, the plumbing contractor. The other guy just, he eventually couldn't believe it that I knew things, but eventually he started talking to me like a regular person. You know, he just, you had to get the job done, so he wasn't going to go through a whole lot of stuff. And he was a decent guy, you know, just unprepared for, you know, that, which was fine. But very little nastiness, but when you encounter it, it's deep. You know, it's deep. It's like it's your everyday job. There's the one guy who I couldn't think of anything to do. I really couldn't. I'm very resourceful in that way. I can turn things around. I've been working in the trades for a long time. And I finally just, I was at my wit's end, so I just told him I have a brother who's 6'4". He's a cop, and he's going to kick your ass if you talk to me like that again. And then he stopped. But, you know, that's the only time I ever had to do that, you know.
His attitude changed? Not really?
No. He just got... he just stayed away. Yeah, he got rude. Fine.
Tell me about your sources of support, and how are you getting support in terms of doing this? And
Well, you know, there was women in the trades for a short period of time. I'm just going to a few things there, but United Tradesmen was really the best mm-hmm. sort of most comprehensive. We had so much fun.
How did you hook up with them?
Boy, I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember. It's just you kind of knew of it after a while, mm-hmm. And Marty and I think started going. We did some things when there was a conflict in the group at some point. Tried to help there.
Conflict resolution.
Yeah, sort of. We
type
things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We tried to help them sort mm-hmm. it out. It had gone a little too far, though. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what that conflict was?
Yes, somebody was attacking the two people who were in charge. You know, uh-huh. accusing them of I don't know what, but it was a mistake. You know, it's mm-hmm. like that thing whenever people attack a leader of an organization like that, a progressive one. It's not that the leader didn't make mistakes. They might have, but it was beside the point. Mm-hmm. It was like this was about disrupting and destroying the mm-hmm. organization, which it ultimately did, which was mm-hmm. a shame.
So you think that that conflict was ultimately responsible for
Oh, yeah.
it? Yeah.
Yeah, because okay. Lois and Irene, who were heading it, who did, I thought, a terrific job of thinking about the group mm-hmm. and just the motivation, and you know, both of them were just entirely sincere and entirely hardworking, you know, and this woman came along who had an agenda, I think. I don't think she knew what it was, mm-hmm. but it was, I think, probably just problems with anybody who looked like they were in charge, mm-hmm. and we needed them mm-hmm. to front us, and they did a brilliant job of fronting us. It wasn't exactly a power grab. It's like, you know, there wasn't that much to, you know, but they, for a long time, it was just the source of the place for women to come and, you know, try to find a home, and mm-hmm. we had a good collection of people. I mean, it had its troubles, but you know, it was the only game in town mm-hmm. at that point.
I'm always struck by how creative and imaginative the programs were.
Yeah. Yeah.
What were some of the things that you attended that stick out in your mind?
Well, there's one that I was involved with that was just the whole thing on harassment. We just mm-hmm. really, we got great people to talk about, come in and talk, both experts who, from one end of the scene, but then the women themselves, mm-hmm. you know, could talk. And that was the great thing about it, sort of gave a voice to the women. It was, you know, we knew what the trouble was, and we had great strategies mm-hmm. for sort of figuring it out that, was just a place to come and talk about all that. So, you know, how to do, you know, deal with stuff like that. And I do think the key thing they provided, though, was just a place where other women were having a similar struggle mm-hmm. and you could not feel like it was just you. And often hard to talk to other women about it because then they would attack the men who were these working class guys mm-hmm. who you might have a fine relationship in some ways, but the sexism was horrific, you know, and you know, so it was just nice to be with a group of women who were, you know, had made those decisions and were fighting that similar battle. You didn't have to explain a lot, you know, like, or people saying, why in the world would you want to do this, you know, and not understanding the art of it and the beauty of it and the fun of it and the, just being that powerful and self-determined, you know, so.
So, did you eventually make a decent living doing plumbing?
I did, yeah. I mm-hmm. did very well with plumbing, and it suited me.
It suited you. You liked
mm-hmm.
it.
Oh, very much. I still like it. I still do my own. You know, I do plumbing in my house, and then my friend was recently going to divorce her boyfriend because he made a mess of it, so I went over and fixed it. You know, so I love having, I fix my mom's stuff, you know. I don't earn my living yet, but it was... I love it. I love construction. I love doing it. I love knowing I can do that. I mean, it's, you know, I still work on my house. I build all the time. So, you know, I just built my son's room. So it's great, you know. Mm-hmm. It's such a great, great feeling.
Now, you worked pretty consistently?
For a chunk of those years, I did. And then towards the end, it started to get harder. Mm-hmm. There were fewer jobs and... the contractor I had worked with just didn't want to do the work anymore, sort of drifted away from the work, and, you know, the group of us had sort of, he'd been the contractor, so he would find the jobs, and so, you know, and I just didn't, I did some contracting of my own, I did a few jobs, but the headache of it was never something that I enjoyed, and, you know, I can't believe sometimes the things I was willing to take on. But So the work dried up, and that's mm-hmm. when I eased out of it,
okay.
too. Yeah.
And what year was that about?
Oh, I can never remember. When did I start? I was in it for about 14 years,
okay.
I'd say.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to just ask you a couple more things about United Tradeswomen.
Yeah.
What do you think they accomplished besides establishing a place for women, which is not insignificant?
No, right.
What are some of the other contributions?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that they were a force, you know, that in the city they hadn't quite turned the corner to become, you know, something that people would have to reckon with. But I thought that was right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of one of the wonders I had about why the attacks happened when they did. You know, I'm not generally a paranoid person, mm-hmm. but I... But they were... That it allowed women to be in the trades. I don't know, you know.
To survive. And to keep going.
To keep going. It's like just the fact that you knew there were these women who did it was often mm-hmm. enough to just, it kept us in the trades for longer than I think we would have mm-hmm. otherwise. And I know some unions did, like the electricians mm-hmm. did a better job of having women's groups, although there were struggles mm-hmm. within that as well, just because they got pitted against each other in all kinds of ways. But that was the beauty of United Tradeswomen. It's like for the longest time we actually had a core connected mm-hmm. group that just allowed all of us to stay in maybe longer than we would have survived otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because most of us were the only women anywhere
right.
within a 3-mile radius in our jobs.
Did you attend any of the demonstrations? They had a couple of demonstrations. They had one at the convention mm-hmm. center, and they had one at AT&T. They had one with the pots and pans demonstration.
No,
no?
I didn't. Mm-mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, were you conscious of other organizations? I mean, AllCraft was one,
mm-hmm.
but like now, the New York City chapter of National Organization for Women
mm-hmm.
was also working on behalf, trying to get women into the jobs, lawsuits,
no.
things like that. You weren't conscious.
Not
of.
At all, which is odd, you know. But I also ended up working for non-traditional employment for women.
Oh, you did?
Much later,
uh-huh.
yeah. Much
After,
later.
It was when Women in Apprenticeship Training or some WAP, something
yeah.
first.
Yeah.
And you worked for them when after they changed
after
their name
that,
to
yeah.
New.
Yeah.
And what did you, teaching or?
Yeah, did I did. When it was first Women in Apprenticeship Project, that was viewed by many suspiciously as a kind of a wedge to, I mean, I don't know whether it was deserved or not, but many women viewed it suspiciously as a union-inspired thing that was mm-hmm. guys trying to set up a counterpoint to United Tradeswomen. So it was an interesting relationship. It was Mary Garvin, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
So, tricky. But they did do, as AllCraft was starting to expire, there were dicey relationships with all of these,
yeah.
and I don't know if I really
still are,
talk
right.
about that because it's
mm-hmm.
just the internalized oppression, and you kind of hate to do that. But, you know, with limited funding and limited resources,
mm-hmm.
there was bound to be tension there. But we tried to do a consortium for a while. We almost did it.
I know. It was so exciting.
Yeah.
I've just seen the papers.
It
looked pretty amazing.
It was almost there, but it got...
And it looked like there was going to be grant writing for it.
Yeah.
I haven't found any papers that show
yeah.
that they anybody did a grant.
Like jettison those things, but anyway, I don't know what I would
yeah.
have had. But
what happened to them?
Yeah, it fizzled. I think just the personalities involved mm-hmm. couldn't finally make a go of it. You know, Joyce Hartwell, Mary Garvin. Wasn't
strong personalities.
Wasn't going to happen.
Okay.
And Joyce Hartwell, to her credit, I feel, always had a picture of the class component of things. A lot of the women, you know, and the race component, a lot of the women that could function in the trades turned out to be white and mostly middle-class mm-hmm. backgrounds. And that was tricky because... And I don't know that that ever got fully, you know, that never got fully tackled. But Joyce would keep her eyes on the prize on that one. And I always respected that. I thought she really did get that. And non-traditional employment for women eventually, I felt, took hold of that under Martha
Baker.
Martha, I thought, was Martha understood, you know, she was had fought sexism in many venues, so she was very clear about certain things and racism. She understood that racism and sexism were bad, and this was good. This was helpful. And when she, so when she was at the helm there, it did feel like a good place to work.
And that's when you worked there.
Yeah, I worked there. I taught shop for a while, because Marty left the job. She was going to do other things, so I took over. And then I became a project manager for different projects, teaching pre-apprenticeship for formerly homeless men and women to go into the trades. They actually worked out a deal with the trades union to let these folks in. It was a big partnership. It was involving the Prince George Hotel. So, and also to survivors of domestic violence. We did a big project. And
that was still through New.
Yeah, New and New Destiny. Grants. And yep. And it used to be called Victim Service. They changed their name. New Horizons. Yeah. Safe Horizons.
Right. Safe Horizons.
Yeah, that's what it is. So, you know, I enjoyed teaching there. I enjoyed teaching the women, and especially domestic violence survivors. That was a great project. You know, it was a great concept, and a lot of the women, you know, they're never funded quite long enough because it would take a really long time to really do what needed to be done. But it was, I felt like, you know, man, you get women, just if you just taught them how to change a washer, it changes your life. You know. You know what goes on behind a wall. It's different.
So the funding got cut for it? Is that?
No, that's still ongoing.
It's still going.
Yeah.
Because one of the big components of TANF and the reauthorization, which it hasn't been, as I understand it, as of now, but trying to argue for more funds for training.
Yeah.
And, you know, Republicans aren't keen on that, but it could be so important.
Well, yeah, and it's an interesting time with the welfare, you know, welfare to work stuff, and the amount of, you know, where we haven't seen the, you know, full ramifications, I think, of that. You know, that, I mean, you know, it's typical. It's like the women who I knew, it got such a bum rap, you know, welfare moms. I mean, just a targeted group, if ever there was one, just horrifically targeted. And all the women, very few exceptions, were so dedicated to finding work despite the fact that they weren't going to get their child care paid. I'm just going to turn this down. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, so, you know.
Right. It's...
So they had the triple whammy. You know, you're a parent, you have, you're a single parent often, you have kids, you've got no training skills, and, you know.
Now, I wanted to ask you that. I didn't put that on the list of questions I sent, but I was thinking about it. And you have a son now. How old is he?
He's six.
He's six. The difficulties for women in the trades with young children. I mean, now that you're a mom. And,
yeah.
I mean, enormous, right?
Enormous, yeah. It's like the hours. Where do you find childcare at those hours to get to a job at 5, 6 in the morning? You know, just what I used to come home like at the end of the day. Sometimes I'd be
exhausted.
Furious.
furious
and exhausted. I wonder, you know, not even just there's the sexism and all the other class stuff that you're putting up with, but also there's just the physicality of the job. I mean, you hurt yourself. You're basically using your body as a tool until it wears out, you know. And I could tell, like, that used to... I could understand why a lot of guys wind up kind of cranky. At the end of the day, I understood my father better than I ever had, you know.
Right.
You know, getting up at 4 in the morning for him, you know, doing cement work in the freezing cold, I don't know. So, you know, for the mothers, I think, boy, I don't know how they do it. I don't. And, but they are the higher paying jobs, you know. So, you know, your choices, it's like, they're higher paying and they're also just, they just change something for women to know that you could. You know, so.
Yeah, just I see women down at the World Trade Center site.
Yeah.
I saw an iron worker yesterday. Aww. And it's just, you know, to see them walk with their hard hats and their pride and their tools. And
yeah.
It's great.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So
I wanted to ask you about what your thoughts on the contributions of affirmative action. And it's a very contested terrain, really. Mm-hmm. But what are your thoughts, having been a pioneer?
Hmm. Well, the reason I got into my first entry into the Plumbers Union was because there was a guy who was leaving for the West Coast, and as a joke, he got us in. So, I think you have to do something to level the playing field. There's just no way around it that it's not a level playing field. And but you have to do it in enough numbers, and you have to, because to pick people off one by one, it takes a lot out of somebody to be the only one. You have to have terrific drive, and it's not quite fair, you know, mm-hmm. that's how it is, you know, mm-hmm. that it takes somebody who has, just by chance or luck or whatever, to have a support system that works for them. So I would say affirmative action, but it had to be done, you know, in a way that actually works. But you have to do it in enough numbers so that people aren't alone trying to figure that stuff out. You know, that survival rate is very low. And, you know, I mean, I'm in contact with somebody now who, from one of the projects that we did, who just experienced, you know, it wasn't sexual harassment, it was sexual assault. And it took me a day to actually get that it was sexual assault, which I was shocked at, you know, that the level of crap that we're sort of used to putting up with, you know, that just by, you know, that's what you do in the trades. It's almost like, it's almost filters from the men. It's like the men are used to being abused by their bosses and their bodies, and so it's an environment of
in
just...
In that culture.
Yeah, it's a
very
heavy,
harsh,
mean... I mean, that's one of the reasons women are threatening. It's like they're forever, like, doing stuff at each other to prove that they're not gay. You know, like, it's hysterical, you know, if they could see themselves. But it's a very harsh culture, and it, you know, it... A lot of women will try to take on that harsh persona, which, you know, I really felt like, you know... It felt second nature to me because I grew up in a family mm-hmm. like that, but there really has to be a better, you know, like for women to come in en masse and help to change the culture, and for men to contribute their, what they know, that's what you'd want ideally, mm-hmm. like to have a culture that made mm-hmm. sense and that people weren't being abusive to themselves or each other. And, but I think the only way that happens is the, you know, the amount of people mm-hmm. that are brought in mm-hmm. because if you do two or three and... This young woman I'm talking to now, I'm trying to actually go through now, a legal thing. It's stunning to me that this can still be happening, you know. And I don't know how much you've found mm-hmm. just listening and talking to people, but, you know, I don't think she's an isolated incident.
That's why I'm doing the book.
Yeah.
Because I used to be an advocate.
Yeah.
And I know it's still.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're far from critical mass.
Yeah, we are far from critical mass.
So, any ideas about how we might, prognosis, how we might get those numbers or sort of revolution?
Mm. Yeah, there.
Yeah, that's the answer.
Right. Well, how did they do it in the Soviet Union? I keep wondering, you know, it's like they just hired women, you know. I mean, yeah. it's you know, it starts from way, way little. I mean, my son sees me, and he thinks all women do construction work. Mm-hmm. I'm the one who does construction. Dad does other things. You know, mm-hmm. Dad cooks, you know. And it has to start that early, and that's mm-hmm. just not, it's not in the books. It's not in the, you know, it has to, you know, sort of be in the culture. Mm-hmm. It has to be, you know, I think the way they did it in the Soviet Union was they... said, we're going to now hire women to do these things, mm-hmm. and it would take that big of a mandate. It seems so impossible. I'm trying to really, you know, realistically, like what...
Yeah. Somebody told me that there's more women in non-traditional jobs in children's books than there are in non-traditional jobs.
Yes, right, that's true.
Do you see that
in books? Occasionally, yeah, you have the liberal sort of like, books for kind of thing, but it's good. I'm happy. Mm-hmm. I'm happy. Right. You know, it's like, yeah, show us doing things. and see if that doesn't help this next generation. It's complicated. Like, what would really turn it around? I mean, it is a mindset, but it's also internalized. I mean, women have...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I watch this, like, because in the training, for instance, like, women would lift weights. And sometimes the woman would lift weights and then just a couple things, and then she'd say, I can't. And then I would just say, yeah, let's try it. Let's try it for more times. And sometimes she'd have to cry really hard. If she cried really hard, and I can't tell you how many times this happened, like for a couple minutes, suddenly she could... It's our heads. Uh-huh. It's like that she really believed she couldn't do it, but she could. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw a lot of these women, I saw what they did, but the minute they did this, mm-hmm. it's like there's such a internalized message of incapacity.
Mm-hmm.
And if they could just be gently pushed and get to cry some about it, because it always seemed to take that, or yell or something, mm-hmm. then I can't tell you how many times, in the training program. So there's a built-in thing in our heads that says we can't do it. And that was one of the joys of teaching, actually. It's like, yeah, you can. Mm-hmm. Take that saw. And then watching a woman finally, you know, be at home with the tool, it's just, you know, mm-hmm. boys grow up from the time they're 7 with that stuff. You know, it's not inherent. It's just practice. But there's an internalized message here, and then there's institutionalized message out there.
Have you ever thought about, I guess they have all kinds of educational credentials that you need, but I'm thinking of vocational schools.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? When I taught at Alfred, we had to go and do some training, and that's when it occurred to me, like, maybe you could, just do this. Part of it would be really fun.
Yeah, really, really fun to do, yeah.
Rebecca Lurie is doing a program.
Right. Yeah. And she was at the Carpenters Union for a long time,
right.
Which was great,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Your concluding comments on the women's movement and organizing in this ridiculous political climate we're in right now, there's never been a greater need. But do you have any, you are still an organizer, right?
Yes.
What are you organizing now?
I organize this neighborhood mostly. I'm co-chair of the big community garden that's on the next block, and we are trying to keep the old-time neighbors here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we just had a great success with the guys across the street, the SRO. Getting them representation because their family was trying to get rid of them.
Uh-huh.
These guys have lived here 50-something years. They're great guys. They have a family. It's their neighborhood. Everybody thinks they're transient. These guys have lived here 50 years. This new group is transient.
So we're on the Bowery between Prince and mm-hmm. Houston. And what street is the community garden on?
It's on Rivington and Christie. Okay. Christie Forsyth, Rivington, the Lancet. So that's a big bulk of what I do now. I'm trying to keep, get the divergent communities here. Chinese, Dominican, Puerto Rican, white, whatever's, and the African Heritage Group, which has been a strong component of the garden for a long time. So we're trying to make us more of a group, and it's terrific. I love it. It's my avocation. And I also, in my son's school, I'm heavily involved in the Parents Association. It's a neighborhood school. It's a public school. Mm-hmm. It's a great school. It's, mostly Chinese, low-income. So,
School is that?
PS-130.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great school. And it's a great school. And it really is a great school. So that's the big bulk of what I do now. And a lot of trying to organize around moms, a lot of that. You know, and I think, working in the trades, it just, really the thing it teaches you is don't quit. It's sort of what I was saying about the lifting weights.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I remember so many times I'd have a wrench, and I'd feel it, like, I can't do this. Let me go get one of the guys. And then I'd just say, no, you're going to do it. And then I would move it, I'd budget. Mm-hmm. And it's just that, it's like the don't quit. It's like I feel about a lot of the projects I do here, like this one that was successful. I just felt like the one thing I can do is persist. I can be like a drop of water, forever until you move this thing that makes sense to do. So Vis-a-vis the women's movement, you know, it's gone through different transmutations. I think the, you know, pardon the language, but as capitalism gets more ferocious, all the oppressions have heated up. And I think what young women experience today is probably something I can't even quite imagine, you know, in terms of the subliminal and the outright barrage of messages about, you know, what it means to be female. And I think we have a big fight on our hands. And but I also feel like never before in the history of the world have more people known more about what's actually going on, ever in history, you know, that we actually do have more information than we've ever had, more access to it, more, we know something now. We're not, you know, so there's this climate of, you know, reactionary, you know, that's heavy in the country, but there's also this concomitant, you know, there's this counterweight, you know, that more people are more organized. You know, you could see it in this last election, you know, that the election was, it's kind of a manifestation of all of it. It's it's not like we had a truly, truly big alternative, but it was a better alternative in my mind. But, you know, there's a progression. And it just, you know, it's like Arundhati Roy said, he's the best organizer we've ever had as president. So, and I think in the worldwide movement, there's great hope. I mean, you know, just when I went to Beijing in 95, it's just a stunning what people are doing. And I was in Durban in 2001 for the racism conference, the UN sponsored. And there, the world is moving, you know, the world is moving. There were 3,000 Dalit women, you know, the untouchables, so-called. 3,000. You know, they had organized themselves to get there. That was phenomenal. They put their agenda on the map, you know. And, you know, so I just feel like we're not the only place that we have to, you know, there's other, the round the world is organizing as well. And so, you know, we got our work cut out for her. It's like I feel strongly like, you know, dig in locally, you know, really nail your feet to the floor locally and understand what's going on in your own neighborhood and fight your battles there, and then keep your eye on the global thing, you know, like you have one hand in both or something. And I'm quite hopeful, you know. I mean, I get to be, you know, I'm a mom, you know, I don't get to bury my head. Like, you know, he pushes it, and he lives life with great joy every day, even after the election, you know.
He's What's his happy. Name?
Lee.
Yeah.
I'm a lucky woman.
You are. It's wonderful to meet you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Really. I am so thrilled that you're doing this book. You know, I was, in talking to the young woman I was talking to after she told me what had happened, and I knew you were doing your book, and I thought, thank God. You know, it's 1,000 points of light, you know. It's like whatever we have to push on, you know, that we just, that this issue doesn't get left alone, you know, like as if we've accomplished something. And so I thank you for doing that.
Thanks.